This is Matches Below, and you're watching Citywide Blackout. Justice for all.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Citywide Bites, our live Saturday morning show. Glad to have you all here. In this episode, we're going to be talking comics. We'll be chatting in just a little bit with Ryan Estrada. He's the creator behind way too many titles for me to actually list in this episode, but quite a few. Multi-award-winning comic creator. Titles like The Banned Book Club, Occulted. We'll talk about a couple new titles he has just around the corner. And of course, if you want to join in, ask questions, make comments, certainly jump on in. We'd love to have that kind of audience interaction. But let me get Ryan on the call, on the show. All right. That's off to him. All right. And how's everyone going? How's everyone doing? Hope you've all had a great week, a great weekend. If you're in my area, it's an absolutely gorgeous weekend out. So get out there and do some stuff. Don't just stay in all day. Just stay off the screens, go do something else. Watch this show and then go do something else. But in the meantime, all right. Well, we can. There we go.
There.
Ryan, welcome to the show, man. Great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Now, as I mentioned earlier, you have two comics. One is just around the corner, about to drop. The other later on in the year, so something to look forward to later in the fall. Let us begin, just kind of kick things off with talking about your new release, which is happening on May 14th. This one is called The Silver City, second part in the Student Ambassador series, which is kind of like a collection of kids' stories. It's more for the younger audience. Could you start by just giving us a quick walkthrough as to what this particular volume is going to be all about?
Yeah, well, Student Ambassador is my like adventure series. It's kind of what I wish Tintin had been when I was a kid.
Yes,
we call it a kid series. The audience for every book I write is me, and so it's just adventure stories that I wanted to read. And like I wanted to love Tintin as a kid so much, but the first volume I opened, I saw his dog called him a racial slur, and I'm like, I don't know about that. And then everything in it. Once they started traveling the world, I'm like, none of these countries are anything like this. I think he's just making this stuff up. And so I decided to make a series where this adventurer traveled to real places and solved real mysteries using like real facts about the place that I love to make it come true. And so the latest volume, The Silver City, takes place in Zacatecas, Mexico, which is where my grandfather comes from. And it's this amazing city where it used to be a silver mine. And they had the city here and the silver mine here, and they both kept getting bigger until they overlapped to the point that they're like, oh, if we keep going, the city's going to collapse. So they shut it down, and it became a museum. There's a nightclub down there. And you can walk completely under the city, then take an elevator up through a mountain, and then take a cable car over. So you can go all the way under and over the city. And I'm like, this is a great place to set a fun mystery. So it's a kid's mystery adventure about monsters and ghosts in those caves and whether or not they're real.
And I am partway through the comic, and I gotta say it's really, really good. I mean, you know, I really love the humor and the adventure of it. And I gotta say, a nightclub in an abandoned silver mine, I like the idea. If someone hasn't already done this, I'm doing this because it's a good idea.
It's a real place.
Oh my god, seriously. Out.
Yeah, everything. What's fun about writing these books is, like, I actually, everyone takes place in a place I've really been, and I make sure it fit, like, if you walk this many steps, you're going to get to this part, you go up to this, like, it's all, my artist Axer really makes it feel like you've been there in all these places, and so, yeah, all that stuff's real.
Yeah. The art in this one, and as you mentioned, Xer Ennius is the artist behind this one. That's fantastic stuff. They do amazing work. How'd you meet this person?
Xer just, I was looking for someone to draw this book. I talked about it on social media because I'm an artist, but I realized that there's certain things that other people are better at drawing than me. And when Xer applied and sent me his portfolio, I was blown away. Axer is from Mexico, as the character is. I'm my grandfather's from Mexico, but he really brought a lot more to the story than I could. and just like I said, what even I've sent the book to friends who live in Zacatecas, and they're like, this feels like I'm walking around my hometown.
Oh, cool. Was Exer able to add some more detail or some more like insight that maybe like you didn't have because it had like been a while?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Exer, obviously, you know, living in Mexico is able to really make it feel very accurate. But even in the first book, takes place in Korea, where I'm zooming from right now, where I live. And I went and took photos of everything and sent it to him. And he captured Korea so well that I'm like, you've never been here. How did you make it feel like I'm walking through Seoul? Just very talented.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All right, I want to ask about the main character of the series, Joseph. As you mentioned, mm-hmm. Student ambassador. I love his just, like, his intelligence and his, like, surety of himself. You know, mm-hmm. How'd you go about creating the character?
Well, I mean, the whole series is based on when I was a kid, I was a student ambassador. I went to Australia. And this series is just what I wished had happened at that time. Because it was just like a package tour. And so I wished I was going to go and have international adventures and solve mysteries. And Joseph is kind of like a wishful thinking of like making a superhero whose superpowers are active listening and empathy. And I always, although that sounds like it's something that would be like really annoying to read in a book, I always pair him with someone who's a real jerk, just so you get that balance. And you know, in the second book he's with a former president who's really full of himself, and the first one he's with a boy king who's just the most awful little boy. He appears again in the sequel in a smaller part, but yeah, I love pairing him with awful people, because then you kind of get that balance of him just making them look horrible by being nice. That nice bit where you can like just make like crush someone and insult them terribly just by being so nice when they're awful.
I like that. Yeah. Was this character how you originally envisioned him, or did he kind of undergo some changes as you kind of went along in the writing process?
Yeah, I mean, I always tried to make him that way. But the big thing that changes when I was drawing the book, he was always a white kid. Because I started writing this comic when I was a kid, and I thought, well, he's an ambassador to America, so he has to be, you know, a white kid. And then I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm like, wait a minute, I was an ambassador, and I'm Mexican. Why can't he be Mexican? And so it was like this huge like moment where I'm like, everything I've watched as a kid made me believe I couldn't make the kid look like me. Just the same way that like, it's about my trip to Mexico, where everything I watched my whole life, when I moved to Mexico, I had this vision in my head that was like, you know, what you see in a movie. Like, I thought it was going to be a small little town that's like all dirty and dusty and full of cactuses. And I went and I'm like, this is the most beautiful, amazing architecture I've ever seen in my life. And so I tried to capture that in the book as well.
Okay. Is there a goal with these books? Are you looking to sort of accomplish something through the story or the art?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my goal with the series is, like, if a kid can read a fantasy book and come out knowing the entire infrastructure of the wizarding world, or know all these spells, or know, like, the map to Mordor, like, they can memorize all these things, why not make the things that, and not, I don't want to make it an educational book, but I want to make the facts that the character needs to learn the story something that kids, like, you read it, you're in the story, and all of a sudden, like in the first one, he has to solve a mystery by, he has a post-it note with a Korean address written on it, and he has to learn to read Korean. And it's just part of the story, and then kids that have read that are then, like, all of a sudden, like, wait, I know how to read Korean. And so my goal is just that, like, get kids excited about the world enough that they're going to look more into it and learn things that might come back later in life, or might get them excited about learning something else. And not in a way that's like tricking them into learning, but just like, I hope people get as excited about facts about the world as much as I do, because I travel these places and witness them, and I get very excited about them.
I like that approach. I really do. It's really good. Were there other books that you read as a kid that may have tried to teach you in that same way, like not by like tricking you or forcing you, but kind of getting you excited about like, hey, this I want to learn?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest example for me isn't a book, but like with Animaniacs. Like, I to this day, I can sing the Nations of the World song. And like, it's, I love media like that, that like, it's, I watched that because I thought it was funny and I thought it was fun and I memorized it. And to this day, like, nothing, I can't think of a single thing that long that a teacher ever taught me that I still remember.
But you know the song by heart.
Oh, yeah. United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama, Haiti, Jamaica, Peru. We only got 20 minutes. So I'll
exactly.
Stop there,
so but. We can do the entire thing. But you're right. I think it's a lot better when learning is not only fun, but you make the person actually want to mm-hmm. learn more. And maybe they'll say, wait a minute, I listed all these countries. Maybe I want to look them up and kind of see what they're all about.
Yeah. And even beyond like facts about the world, like just, I always say that Student Ambassador is a fantasy series, but the fantasy is that a little boy can tell politicians to their face that they're being dumb and they listen. And I want to teach kids that this is how governments work. This is the power that you have. And even if you're not going to get to hang out with them when they're lost in a cave and tell them you're being dumb, it's okay to question leadership and it's okay to push for what you think is right. And I hope that kids get that out of it.
Okay. All right, folks. We are going to switch gears now and talk about a new book coming out later on this year. This is coming out in October. It's called No Rules Tonight. Definitely a very different track here. It's a much more serious book. Still involves kids, actually. Still involves like young people. But this one is set in 1980s South Korea. But before we get into the story, tell us a bit about the setting. Why this particular place and time?
Well, it's part of a series that's become a series of, I did a book called Banned Book Club right there with my wife. It's her true story of being hunted down by the police in 1980s Korea for reading banned books. She accidentally joined this club and we started that book. It was something she had never told me about at all. We've known each other for over a decade, been married for years. She casually drops it. And then we ended up making a book about it. And there ended up, even though she said I asked her, is there enough to make a whole book? She's like, nah. And then everything she told me blew my mind. And there's so much extra stuff that I'm like, we got to make another book. And so No Rules Tonight actually takes place over Christmas. And I thought it was funny to make a Christmas special in a country that didn't celebrate Christmas, which they kind of did, but it was a completely different holiday. And what happened was, in the 70s and 80s, Korea was under a dictator and there was a curfew. If you're out after midnight, you go to jail. And the only exception, because the curfew was started by American soldiers, was you could stay out as long as you wanted, do whatever you wanted on December 24th. So December 24th became a completely separate holiday in Korea, which was just this is the night to go out and do whatever you want. And as an example, there are a lot of people my wife's age with September birthdays, if you want to do that math and figure out what I'm saying. A lot of, you know, night of debauchery. And so I thought it'd be fun to set a story in that night. And we have a bunch of characters kind of learning how to be themselves for the first time because they just started college. They finally have freedom. And now they have this night where they can do whatever they want.
I like that. All right. Let's talk about the working process with your wife. What's that like? Mm-hmm. How do the two of you collaborate?
I ask her a lot of questions, get her to tell me stories. We did a lot of interviews. She went back and reunited with a lot of the people from her college and her old band book club. And we interviewed them, asked questions. She would translate them for me. We interviewed her parents, her family, and then her and I would sit down and kind of figure out how to fit all the pieces together. In the first book, it was much more, trying to tell a linear story of like, when did this happen? When did this happen? And kind of condense a little bit. But with the second book, because we're taking a lot of small leftover story that kind of didn't fit in that book, we're taking a lot of things that happened and squeezing them into one night. So there's a lot more creativity. This one is, we're calling it fiction just because you know, everything didn't happen in one night on Christmas, but it's all based on real things. So it was interesting working with her to be like, what if we had this character do this and that makes that character do that, and figure out how to fit it all together. So I'm the one at the keyboard typing while she tells me stories. And then the other interesting thing is, in these books, often she gets hired to do the Korean translation. So then we just switch places where she's at the keyboard asking me questions. And most of the questions are like, what does this line mean? And it turns out it's a pun. And she's like, I can't translate that. It doesn't work in Korean.
Oh, wow. You know, you talk about what life was like in this time period, and just like reading the book, it is really intense. Like, you have a kid getting basically beaten up by the cops for listening to music that's on their ban list. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you have midnight, the curfew, and you have people just running once like midnight happens because they got to get home.
Yeah.
I'm curious if there's a particular scene that really stuck with you.
I mean, the moment that, for me in the whole series, the moment that really sticks with me is from the first book, when the police found out about Hyunsuk and called her parents' house looking for her, and she just happened to be the one to pick up the phone. And she had to have a conversation where she didn't want her parents to know she was talking to the police, didn't want the police to know she was home. And so she pretended like she was talking to a boy from school and going out on a date with him. And this is all completely real. We worked it in the book. And so, yeah, it's moments like that of like the ingenuity that kids, like, you know, it these scenes sound shocking, but when you're used to it, it's like, well, let's think on my feet and figure out how to get out of it. And I tried to write a lot of that in the second book of the, you know, there's a scene where the character is trying to walk into the school and there's a policeman checking their bags. And Hyunsuk has a banned book in her bag. And she has to, like, you know, there's a whole scene where they, like, she thinks they're going to pull out the book, but she pulls out a girl's pads instead and, like, teases her about that. And that's that kind of thing that happened a lot. And so I just being able to, like, figure out how to tell those stories in a tactful way is really interesting. But yeah, it's weird. Like, when we were researching all these books, we had no idea that by the time they came out, history was going to be repeating itself in America. And now there's so many banned books in America. Banned Book Club is one of them. Our book has been banned in several states several times.
Oh my God. Seriously. Yeah. That's so messed up.
And I'm sure they're not going to be big fans of No Rules Tonight either, but hopefully we can get away. You know, I'm just trying to stay off the radar. I don't know.
I get you. Learning about South Korean life, was it, did this surprise you? Did you, like, know just how intense it was back then?
Yeah, I didn't know how intense. Like, I'd heard stories, I'd seen movies, but just hearing that not only all these specific things happened, but happened to my wife and to my, you know, father-in-law and mother-in-law and, you know, friends, was really shocking to learn the specificity of how different it was back then. And one of the things that I think makes a series interesting is showing how different Korea is today. Korea is just an amazing democracy. Not that everything's perfect. There's still terrible people that get into office, but people kick them out. They vote them out. They, a lot of times, they put them in jail. There's a time in recent memory where every living ex-president was in jail at the same time because people had to fight so hard to be able to vote that once someone, they feel betrayed by someone, they're like, you did a crime, go to jail. We're not doing all this again.
Yeah, I mean, like, likewise, I've heard that South Korea is a very, like, democratic nation. There's of course a lot of freedom there. Mm-hmm. So to learn that wasn't the case just, you know, 40 years ago, that was shocking to me. And then reading the book was even more shocking because just seeing all these things happening, I thought, wow, this is not at all what I thought it was like. But very, very interesting. All right, let's talk.
Yeah, people had to fight really hard to make that happen, and that's one of the things I want to show in the book. Similar to Student Ambassador, I want to show that young people, they can make a difference, even if it seems like they can't. And even, you know, right now there's campus protests happening in America. In the book, we show that, like, all these kids protesting, the schools did the same thing. They called the police to attack them. They all this violence. And now that those protests have made Korea a free country, the university that these books are about actually a couple years ago invited us to the university to do a press conference thanking us for writing about how the students were right. So hopefully history repeat itself again and people will realize, oh, maybe we should listen to the students instead of beating them.
A wonderful thought. Gosh, why haven't we tried that yet? Yeah. It is interesting that your book is almost like unironically very timely. Like I wound up being very timely because it's coming out in October. And right now we have all this stuff going on, all the schools across the country. So yeah, wow. Weird how that all like works out. Do you feel like this generation has something to learn from the characters in your book?
Yeah, all these books are about how history repeats itself, and we really hope that people, read this and see that all these things that we're just debating and discussing, they've happened again and again and again. And luckily, in Korea, because it happened so recently, people really learn from that, and all their actions come from like, look, this is exactly what happened last time. We can't let this happen, but. In other countries, it's really harder to make people look at the past and draw conclusions from it. So hopefully people will read this book and see that, you gotta look at what's already happened because it's the same thing.
Exactly. Well, folks, that is all the time we have for this episode. Of course, I want to thank Ryan for joining us. If you want to learn more about his books, he has got so much stuff on his site, people. There's a lot of stuff you can check out. He's got, of course, comics. He's got films. He's got, like, audiobooks, all kinds of good stuff. You can find everything at Ryan Estrada, ESTRADA.com. Of course, pick up The Silver City in about 1 week. And then later on this fall, No Rules Tonight. And Ryan, thanks again, and definitely looking forward to the next conversation.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And for the folks at home, thanks once again for tuning in. Of course, if you're not already doing so, please follow this page. Follow me on Facebook under Citywide Blackout, Twitter under Citywide Max. Check out our shows on Podbean, Spotify, all your various podcasting platforms, and we'll see you next time. Later. And with that, we bring this episode to a close. Thanks for listening, and if you haven't already, check us out on Facebook under Citywide Blackout, and Twitter and Instagram under Citywide Max. You can catch this and all your favorite episodes on your favorite podcast platform, and new episodes are added every week, as well as on Boston Free Radio every Saturday at 10 p.m. You get me at citywidemax@yahoo.com if you want to suggest a guest, submit your music, or just drop us a line. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.